Transmission will start in 5 seconds from now. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, in.
Hello and welcome to the Roy Harper Podcast. This is number 22 for May 2009. I'm Paul Davison and I run the website stormcock.net. In this show we will have a news update, an interview with Aro Koskinen from Finland, the A-to-Z of Harper, this time it's the letter U, listener feedback, including a competition, so keep listening if you normally give up by the time we get to the feedback. There's a really interesting competition coming up as well, and of course the usual selection of music. First off, some news. Now, last month I featured a Roy Harper remix by a guy called Passion Duval, and I thought I'd better declare now this was, of course, an April Fool, because Passion Duval is just an anagram of Paul Davison. And I think one or two of you got fooled, but most of you didn't, but I hope you enjoyed it anyway. And as you can hear from the background, I liked it so much I've used it as the theme music for this month. You know, the bizarre thing is, I just put it together as a joke, but I found that I actually quite like it. Every now and then I give it a quick blast when I'm, you know, getting a bit bored with work or whatever, which is a bit bizarre. I put it together in Apple GarageBand, and thankfully Roy has been very gracious in not sending a hit squad after me to teach me a lesson after the butchering that I did for his wonderful poem at the start of the Lord's Prayer. So... thank you, Roy, for your forbearance there. Now, in actual news, Roy has put together... well, he's been an actor in a video, a small 3 or 4 minute thing called Brokeback Cowboy. And you can find this on YouTube. I'm going to put the link to it in the show notes, of course. Roy says, "We made this short film in the pub. I grew my Gabby Hayes beard especially for it. It was a lot of fun. This could be the beginning of something small." Now, obviously, a video is not particularly going to come over too well on audio, but what the hell, I'm going to run it anyway. So a bit later in the podcast, you'll get the audio from the short film, and that will give you, hopefully, enough to go on and intrigue you enough to go off to YouTube and have a quick look. So let's kick off with our first track, and I've chosen Songs of Love, Part 1, from the Dream Society album. Sweetest heart, my apple cart, my other half, my man.
Woman, you're the bravest soul I've ever seen, the lover that you've always been, yeah. Oh, oh, oh. Oh, woman, the woman who for heaven's sake opened up and got to make human. The woman who opened up and got to make human. Well, you and me and we are three, the undivided Trinity. From thunderclap to daddy, the triumph.
Well, never mind the controvert. You owe it to that dusty hat to feel me dream the dream.
the woman who for heaven's sake opened up and got to make you man. The woman who opened up and got to make you man. You are my love, my darling. I ride wild horses calling you here. Eternal inspiration. The woman who for heaven's sake opened up and got to make you mine. The woman who opened up and got to make you mine. The woman who opened up and got to make you mine. And I'm the man who ran into your flames with my dreams. We are the beginning of life on earth when we bring,
when we bring
the kids to the universal spring. The beginning of life on earth when we sing songs of love. Songs of love, songs of love, songs of love. Songs I could sing you, songs we should sing, songs of love. Songs of love, songs of love, oh love. We are the beginning of life on earth, beginning the quest for the everlasting. Beginning of life on earth when we sing songs of love, songs of love, songs of love, songs of love. Sing you songs we should sing, songs of love, songs of love, songs of love, oh love, oh love, oh woman, girl, make love to me,
make love to me,
and I'll be yours forever. Make love to me, and I
So, this month, my interviewee is Aro Koskinen, whose name I've probably pronounced completely wrongly, but I'm sure he'll tell me in a moment. Aro lives in Finland, and he'll be known to some people who like to look up Roy Harper information on the web, because he has an extraordinarily informative website, which we'll talk about in a little while. But hi there, Aro, how are you doing?
Fine, thanks.
Good, good. How's the weather in Finland?
Oh, it's really cold here. I mean, it's below zero still.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's colder than normal, so...
Well, we actually, in England, had a fantastic weekend, and it was really sunny. Because I went to see Nick Harper play yesterday in Cambridge. And beforehand, we went to a pub and sat out in the garden with a pint of beer. Oh. And it was your classic English scenario. It was really great. But I think probably that's the last bit of sun we'll have until next year. Because we don't get very much.
Yeah.
Anyway, can you introduce yourself, first of all? Tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do, both professionally and in music.
Okay, my name is Aro Koskinen, and I'm a Roy Harper fan from Finland. I'm 35. Uh-huh. I live in Helsinki, the capital of Finland. I live with my wife, and I work as a software engineer in a Finnish telecom company.
A well-known Finnish telecom company, yes.
Yeah.
Right.
And I run a website, which Paul mentioned, and I also make music, yeah, using the name Music Note.
I don't think I've heard any.
Yeah, good for you.
No, don't say that.
Yeah, we can talk about it later. Okay. Yeah.
All right, well, let's start at the very beginning then. How does somebody in Finland become a Roy Harper fan? How did you hear the music, and when? How did it grab you? Did you like it immediately? So how did it all start with you?
Yeah, actually, it's quite simple. I started to listen to music at quite old age. I was about 15 years old before. I mean, I didn't have any records before that. And
okay.
Then I got a Pink Floyd album. Wish You Were Here.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, fantastic. Yeah,
and I think it's still one of my favorite albums. And so then I got really into Pink Floyd.
Mm.
I mean, I bought all the albums and whatever. And I guess it was through that, because I had this book about Pink Floyd, this visual documentary. You probably know it. It's
yeah, I don't have a copy, but I've seen it.
Yeah, and I mean, I read through it multiple times, and and Roy is mentioned there many times. And I mean, then I just found Roy's records from record shop and started buying them. And I mean, it was really, I don't remember which was the first record, but I really got into his music and lyrics and so on.
Was it easy to get the records?
Yeah, I mean, I think Roy was very well known here in the 70s.
Right.
So all the second-hand shops were full of his albums.
Oh, cool.
So I think I found all of them in a couple of months or so.
Oh, you did a lot better than me then. When I started, some of the albums you just couldn't get. Flashes from the Archives of Oblivion was very rare, and it used to cost a lot of money secondhand.
I think it was the second album that I...
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, that was a good one, because that's kind of representative of the 70s Roy, but it's a really nice live album. I think that sort of sets the scene.
I think the CD is not that good, because it doesn't work on CD that well.
In what way? Because I know they chopped it around a little bit, didn't they?
Yeah, I think there is a couple songs missing
right
at the end. And I mean, the original album had this four different sides, and I mean they are like different kind of.
Oh, I see what you mean. So yeah. each side's got its own kind of feel, its own sort of theme.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, what year was that then, roughly?
Ah, yeah, it was 20 years ago.
I know. We all feel very old. Oh, I see. So, yeah, if you're 35 now, then that would have been around 15, 16.
Yeah, and then also the new albums were available here.
Right.
Like Once and Burn the World, and I think they were released in 90.
Yeah, 90. That's right. That was when the awareness stuff was going really well.
For
a few years it was really great.
Yeah, so it was quite easy to get the albums, and then I also found this internet mailing list.
Oh, yes. Right, I've heard about that.
Yeah, and I mean, the rest is history.
No, I remember you joined the mailing list, and yeah, that was in the early days, really.
I think it was 92.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I set the list up in 89 or 90. So
right. You
were in there pretty early, because before that it was mainly, you know, university computer geeks.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, yeah. I got the internet connection when I went to university, yeah.
Yeah. So back to the music then. What was it about Roy's music that got you hooked? What really spoke to you about it?
I guess it first was the lyrics.
Okay.
Because I usually read the lyrics very carefully, because,
right.
I mean, for non-English speaker, it's easier than to listen to the songs.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if it's how people usually do it, but that's the way. I mean, I always read the sleeve notes and lyrics when I listen to music. And I mean, with Roy, you can just listen to the, read the lyrics and without listening to the music. And I mean, it's poetry.
It is poetry. That's exactly the word I was going to use. It's because he approaches it from the poet's perspective. You can, as you say, you can read them without the music, and you know they stand alone very well.
Yeah, and I also translated many of the songs because just for my own.
Yeah.
Fun and, yeah. I mean, it's really interesting stuff.
So you're a 15, 16-year-old. You've got plenty of the albums. You're starting to make your sort of musical voyage, like we all did, I suppose, at some age. But presumably, you didn't manage to see him play live for a while.
No. I think it took about 10 years.
Yeah.
Get to the first gig. But I also started to collect the live tapes.
Right. So you had a good idea of what to expect.
Yeah, I think I have about 100 tapes at least still.
Okay. Do you still listen to them?
Yeah, and I still download them.
What I have found is that when I was younger, I went to like record fairs where you could buy live tapes off of people, because at the time the internet downloading of live stuff just wasn't there at all, and I used to listen to them a lot, but as I've got older I've become more discriminating about the quality of the audio.
Right.
So if it sounds like it was recorded outside in the car park, then I just can't listen to it anymore.
Yeah, but I think most of them are quite good.
Yeah,
I mean, and also I did a lot of tape trading.
Right.
And, I mean, when you copy the tapes, you always have to listen to them. So you get to listen a lot of them. And, I mean, with CDs, it's different because you can just copy them instantly.
Yeah, a bit perfect copy.
Yeah.
Actually, I kind of miss the cassette days. I used to kind of like doing that.
Yeah. I still listen to the tapes. I mean, there is new music also coming out. Only on cassette.
All right. We'll talk more about your website in just a sec, but what is the best Roy album and what is the worst Roy album?
I don't really know. I mean, I think that Roy's, I mean, I see his output as a, I mean, as a single entity.
Right.
Or how do you say it? Like a, I mean, it's like a single book and each album is a different chapter. So I don't really know if there is any worst or best. Well, actually, I like the solo work best.
Okay.
I don't really like him with the band.
So you're not... Okay, I mean, actually, perhaps a better way of asking you then is what era you like the most, because there was the initial era with acoustic guitars, late 60s, and then there was more polished acoustic stuff with Flatbrook and Berserk and Stormcock, and then there was some band stuff. And then, you know, a bit more band stuff, I suppose, and then back to solo stuff.
Yeah, but... I think it's still difficult to say, because with the band stuff, I still like the songs, I mean.
Ah, right.
You know, I usually, when I listen to Roy, I listen to the live recordings.
Right.
And, I mean, whatever he's playing. And
yeah, I mean, that's interesting, because that's the thing that people have said about Born in Captivity, as opposed to Work of Heart.
That's a good example. Yeah. Because, yeah, it's... really good album. I mean, I like it much more than Work of Heart.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're right. I think the songwriting stands up regardless, and then it's down to individual preference for how it's actually arranged and recorded.
Yeah, actually, now I can say my favourite album.
Yeah?
It's Born in Captivity 2.
Oh, that's an interesting choice. That's a fantastic live album.
Yeah, it's really good, and I mean, again, the CD version is much shorter.
Yeah, the tape has the wonderful short and sweet, and I actually played it on one of the podcasts last year. I don't remember which one, so I don't know whether you've listened to it or not, but I thought it was such a shame that got left off the CD.
Yeah, it's a very good song.
Yeah, and really powerful, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a really good choice, because nobody's said that.
I mean, it has really good selection of songs.
Yeah.
I mean, there's all kind of different types.
Yeah.
There are these loud songs and short songs and poems and whatever.
I spoke to Roy once, actually, when In Between Every Line came out, and I said, you know, I really like listening to live albums because it gives me a good kind of spread across the different styles of the albums and a good representation of how you actually perform it, not in the studio. And he told me that actually live albums for him have never sold very well.
That's surprising.
And it is surprising, because I think that is the real core of the artist. And it's the same thing as with Nick Harper and his double live album, I think, is the best one that he's done.
Yeah, I agree.
Because it's just got pure Nick on there and it's so powerful.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we're in agreement on that then. That's good. All right. Let's talk a bit about websites then. Now, way back when the web started, and I can't really remember when that was offhand, but you set up a site quite early on, didn't you? So how did that come about?
Yeah, it was in 94,
right.
15 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, it's one of the oldest websites in Finland.
Mm.
I mean, there is really few of them back then. And how did I start it? I can't really remember.
Well, but what made you want to do such a thing, first of all?
Well, I was studying computer science, and of course...
Okay. Yeah.
You follow this, what's happening in that with the computers and such. And in our university server, there was this web server started, and people started to create these home pages. I mean, I guess they don't exist anymore.
Oh, they do, actually. I do come across them every now and then. Like with the tilde in front of the username. Yeah.
That was the real lead.
Yeah. That's right. Personal publishing. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not really interesting to write about yourself. So, I mean, usually people write about their hobbies and such.
Mm.
Yeah. So, I mean, I had lots of text files taken from the mailing list, and I just put them, I mean, compiled in a web form and put it up. And I guess that one of the reasons was these guitar transcriptions.
Oh, right.
Which I collecting. I was learning to play guitar.
Oh, tablature, do you mean?
Yeah.
Right.
And I mean, I think there is now about 60 of them on my site, and I mean, that's mainly what people are reading from there.
Well, it's interesting because, obviously you know that I run the Stormcock site now as well, but my one is more about chit-chat and less to do with hard facts. So quite often I'll get like an email from somebody saying, oh, you know, is there somewhere I can find the lyrics for this song, or do you know anywhere I can find some guitar transcriptions? And I say, well, you know, head over to Finland. And there's a chap there who runs a site that's got lots and lots of detail about this stuff. And I think it's a really valuable resource for people. And it's very impressive you've kept it going for so long, because I know from my own perspective how hard it is to keep things like that going.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I mean, I haven't updated it for ages, but I mean, I still need to keep it running.
Yeah.
I mean, at least for the next 15 years.
Well, obviously, I'll put the URL in the show notes, but do you want to say how people can get to it? What's the address?
Oh, it's musicnaut.iki.fi. Then it's /musicnaut/royharper.html.
Right, and that's music naught as in astronaut. Yeah, I'll write it down on the show notes, because people, I've got this mental image of everybody out sat there with a pen trying to write that down. So
yeah, it's quite stupid to say addresses, but
I mean, do people contact you about the site every now and then, or is it pretty quiet?
Yeah, I get email about once a month, and I have this statistics, and I think there is about 500 visitors per month.
That's not bad.
No, it's very stable.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been that for many years, so.
Yeah. So I know you've got, as we've discussed, you've got some lyrics on there, you've got some guitar transcriptions. You've also got a big database of gigs, haven't you? How have you compiled that? Is that from tapes that you've got, or have you just...
Yeah, it's from multiple sources. I mean, it's from old magazines. Somebody sent me some listings from old Melody Maker.
Oh, right.
Magazines, and then some of are taken from Roy Harper magazine and whatever. I mean, and then people are sending these ticket stubs and things like that. So, I mean, it's mainly, it was started because I was collecting these live tapes. So
you needed to keep some kind of record of what you'd got, some kind of database.
Yeah.
Do you cover any Nick stuff on there, or is it just Roy?
Well, there's some, but it's quite limited because, I mean, Nick has his own site. And
yeah.
I mean, I don't have enough time to keep up with the Roy stuff, so.
Well, you're just going to have to stop sleeping then, aren't you?
Yeah.
All right. You've just said you'll keep it ticking over. So the trouble is, of course, Roy isn't touring at the moment. And we don't know whether he will in the future. So I guess it's in maintenance mode right now, isn't it?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a lot of stuff in my backlog that is not on the site yet. And
oh, okay.
I should go through that, someday.
All right. Talking of live stuff, now I know that you've seen Roy live because I've been to at least 3 gigs with you. I can't remember now. But perhaps you'd like to give us some history about when and where you've seen him play. How did you get to your first gig, for example?
Oh, yeah. So I think I've seen him now about 15 times.
Good man.
And the first gig was in London in, was it 98, when the Dream Society was released.
Mm.
It was at the Spitz.
Oh, that was a lovely little venue. Yeah. Well, it still is.
And how I get there?
Well, yeah.
I think you posted the gig listings on the mailing list back then. And
right.
I think I mailed you that, how can I get tickets? And I think you talked to Darren, and I mean, then he gave me free tickets.
I think that sounds about right. Yeah, I can't quite remember, but something like that happened.
Yeah, it was really kind of him, yeah. And thanks to you.
Well, you still had to get yourself over on the aeroplane.
Yeah, that's the easiest part. I mean, I had just got my first proper job back then. And
right.
I mean, I had money to buy the plane ticket.
That's a nice feeling, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, and the gigs were really excellent. I mean, there were 2 nights.
Yeah, and I remember actually, that album was when his voice seemed to start getting much sort of stronger again.
Yeah, I think that it was after this operation.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. He had that kind of spring-loaded lungs operation, and suddenly there was so much power in his voice.
Yeah, and that was also the first time I saw Nick playing.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So, I mean, it was really great.
So that was the Spitz. What came after that?
And then after that was the Royal Festival Hall.
Oh, yes. Now you're talking.
Yeah, that, I mean, it was really excellent weekend.
Mm.
I mean, with the gathering before the real gig.
Yeah, for those that don't know, at the time we had an idea of hiring a room somewhere, and people from the mailing list would just get together and have a chat before Roy's Festival Hall thing. And, you know, on an internet mailing list, quite often people rarely actually meet face-to-face. And if they do, they don't have much in common. But this was completely different. I mean, everybody was into the music and everybody got on well. And the whole weekend with that meet-up and the gig and then the parties in the hotel and everything.
Yeah.
It was just great.
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing. I mean, there was people coming from all over the world, and the gig itself was really good.
Obviously, you've got the official CD from there.
Yeah,
I've played quite a few tracks of that from there on the podcast, because I like to play live tracks on here as well, and I always get some good reactions from people that haven't got the CD and say, "Well, that sounds fantastic." Brilliant evening.
Yeah, and it was very different kind of gig from usually from the club gigs, this big festival hall.
It still had a great atmosphere, but it was formal in a way, but not too formal.
Yeah.
In fact, I think the venue for a gig actually shapes the feel of the gig quite a lot. And the reason I'm saying that is that last night's Nick Harper one that I went to was in Cambridge at the Junction. And actually that was a proper theatre with seating and like wood panelling and a proper stage and everything. And actually, in a way, it was a bit of a shame because you kind of felt subdued. You couldn't quite... He didn't manage to get people engaging as much somehow, and it's just because it was a formal theatre setting, I think.
Yeah.
So, and you know, if you see him play at the Half Moon Putney or somewhere like that, it's a completely different dynamic with the audience.
Right.
Mm. So Royal Festival Hall, which was great. And
then after that I saw a few gigs in the September. I think it was it Green Man Tour or something else? The one where Nick was supposed to be playing, but he broke his arm.
I'd forgotten about that. Yeah.
Yeah, it was after this 9/11 thing.
Right, right.
And I saw him in Manchester and Wales and some other places, I don't remember. Yeah, it was quite okay.
So at that point, you'd become quite used to traveling around.
Yeah, I think I've seen him about once a year or so.
Right. So obviously, your job was going well enough.
Yeah,
that you could afford
it. I don't
it.
Travel much.
Right.
I usually fly once a year.
Okay, yeah. So why not make it something that you really enjoy?
Yeah.
Yeah. So after all of that, I know you went to Clonakilty. Was there any...
Before that, there was this Canterbury Fair.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, it was also excellent. I mean, it was this festival setting. It's quite different from normal gigs. I mean,
yeah.
I guess the best part was that all the fans were hanging around there together.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, festivals are great for that. And you're right, that the whole setting is completely different. But I tell you, Roy's always had a very big festival audience. I think the type of people that enjoy festivals are more likely to understand his message, you know?
Yeah, I think there was really a lot of people listening to him then.
Mm.
I mean, it was really big.
Who else was playing at that festival? Can you remember?
Nick.
It wasn't a trick question. Yeah.
And I mean, I think Robert Plant was there also.
Actually, I might get myself into trouble now for this comment, so I might cut this out at some point. But I remember standing in the audience with Dave Burnham and a few other people, and Robert Plant had, was it a bright blue shirt? I can't remember. He had this sort of very baggy shirt on, and we looked at him, and it was kind of getting caught by the wind, and it wasn't very flattering for Robert Plant. So we started making jokes about Robert Plant having a pair of comedy breasts strapped on, which is that from Blackadder? Yeah, it's from an English comedy program. But anyway. We laughed a lot, and poor Robert, who hopefully isn't listening to this, but the performance was great. And I think In Spiral Carpets were there, weren't they? Am I remembering that right? I don't know.
I can't say.
Anyway, yeah, it's a long time ago now.
I mean, parts of the... I mean, my memory is not very good. I don't remember. All from that festival.
Yeah, well, that's what festivals do to you, really.
Yeah, but yeah, it was really interesting. I mean, it's quite different from Finnish festivals. I mean,
all right.
People can behave, unlike in Finland.
What do you mean?
I mean, you should see a Finnish festival. I mean,
right.
People are really, really drunk, and I mean, it's awful mess and... Oh.
Well, I hate to use stereotypes, but I know that the Finns are known as a hard-drinking nation.
Yeah.
So some people say, anyway. But then again, so is England, so is Britain, you know.
Yeah, but, I mean, I guess you're more civilised.
I don't know. Sometimes. So, okay, Canterbury. What happened after Canterbury?
Then it was Clonakilty next year.
Yeah, I remember that very well, and I was so pleased that you came to that.
Yeah, I think it was the first.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, and I saw all of the three nights, and I mean, it was really great experience. And I mean, the Kona Kilti itself is a really beautiful place.
It is, yeah.
Surroundings and yeah, I was driving around it with bicycle and.
Oh, I remember that. Yes, yes.
Yeah, it's great week. Yeah, and it was really hot.
Yeah, unusually, I actually got sunburnt in Ireland, which never happens.
Yeah.
Was that year the one you came with your future wife, or was that one after that?
No, it was. That was 2 years ago.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
And yeah, it was also great. So I went 2 times in Kona Kilti.
Right. Yeah, you didn't make it to. Or did you make it to the last one? You see, I can't remember.
I think
either.
It was last one, 2 years ago.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. Well, you know, obviously Roy didn't do any gigs last year, but I did go back to Clonakilty last year to do that interview with him, which was great. So we stayed there and did much the same kind of thing as we did the previous years, except there weren't any Roy gigs, unfortunately. Although I managed to go back to DeBarris. With Tracy actually, and go to a couple of gigs, and that was fantastic. But this year we're not going to go there, I think, and I kind of miss it because it's a lovely part of the world, and I really like the people.
Yeah, I mean, I miss that place.
Yeah, maybe we'll get another. Who knows?
Right.
It'd be kind of nice if we did, but I'm not holding my breath. You've already talked about Nick a bit. How do you think Nick compares with his dad? Is he as talented? Do you like the music as much? What do you think of it?
Well, I think he's completely different.
Right.
I mean, as a writer and
right
performer and, but I mean, there is some. Of course, he's a son of Roy Harper, so I mean, you will notice that too, of course. And and I really like Nick's music and. And playing, I mean, he's amazing.
Yeah.
One of the reasons I stopped playing guitar.
Oh, no! He has had that effect on people, actually. I used to say you could always tell who the guitarists were in the audience at a Nick Harper gig, because as soon as he started, you looked around and some people were looking completely amazed and sort of, you know, you know that they were thinking, my God, I've got to put another 5 years of practice in now.
Yeah, I mean, it's really amazing when you see him for the first time. I cannot describe it. And, I mean, you must see it yourself. And,
yeah.
I mean, if anybody has a chance to go to see him, they should.
Oh, I agree entirely. I mean, I still think that he's not quite broken through into the mainstream, if you like, and I just, it's certainly not for lack of talent or skill. He's amazing. So I still hope that at some point, you know, he'll suddenly be launched into the next level. And although I love seeing him in small venues because of the atmosphere, in a way, I'd like to see him play bigger venues to thousands of people and really get the message out there. So
yeah, I think he's playing a lot gigs nowadays.
Yeah.
Because every time I go to the website, there is
Yeah. You may not have heard, I did a special podcast with him and interviewed him, and he said that he made most of his money from gigs and very little from CDs and stuff like that. So he really does it as a working musician. And so I guess he has to play a lot of gigs to get the money coming in, you know.
Yeah, I hope there is many people going to see him.
Yeah, there was actually a fewer last night than last year, and I don't know whether that's because of economic hardship or because it was a Sunday night and people were tired or what. But I think from what I can hear, attendances at concerts in the UK at least are smaller at the moment. And I think it's just because people are being careful with their money.
Oh, that's bad.
Yeah, it is. It is bad. Hopefully it will recover soon. Talking of music scene, I suppose. I mean, what's it like in Finland for a music fan? Do you have lots of bands to go and see? Is there a good sort of live gig stuff going on?
Yeah, I mean, it's there is plenty of music here on gigs. I mean, I think 1 year I saw about 100 gigs.
Oh, not bad.
Yeah, I mean, of course they are quite small, and I mean, I mostly listen to so-called underground music.
Right, right.
But I mean, it's really active scene, and there are a lot of people coming. I mean, not just Finnish musicians and bands, but all over the world. And
well, I had the impression it was quite healthy, because I mean, you will probably remember when we met at Clonakilty 1 year, you gave me some albums to listen to.
Right,
and yeah. Great, all great. And I realised that, you know, there was a lot going on there. You were talking about how hard it was for you as a non-English speaker to cope with lyrics, and obviously I know no Finnish whatsoever, so I'm at a disadvantage with lyrics, but some of the music as well, as you know, I like kind of progressive rock and complicated music, right. And you were able to give me some very exciting progressive stuff to listen to.
Yeah, I think I gave Hydria Space Folk.
Hydria Space Folk, yes. And yeah. I've bought more of their albums since then.
Oh, that's great.
Which just goes to show that lending people or giving people music does lead to more sales of music. So
yeah.
I think so, anyway. No, I thought they were a fantastic band.
Yeah, they are. I hope you will see them live someday.
Well, I've got a live recording tucked away somewhere, and it's very good. So I'd love to see them live.
Yeah, I think they are playing also in... I mean, they have gigs in outside Finland.
Oh, okay. I'll have to look at their website and see, because I'd like to go and see them. I also know that you do share some of my interest in obscure... obscure progressive rock, Van de Graaff Generator, and Hawkwind and stuff like that. So,
and Peter Hamill.
Peter Hamill, yes, Peter Hamill. Yeah, he's got a new album coming out soon.
Oh, right.
Apparently, it's almost ready. So, I'm looking forward to that. But I've been to see him with Van de Graaff Generator a few times since they reformed.
Oh, right, they are now back together.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. They. They started in 2005, and it was the four-piece, but unfortunately David Jackson left due to some reasons that we don't quite understand. So it's a three-piece now, with Peter Hamill, Guy Evans, and Hugh Banton. And the amazing thing is, these three guys, who are in their 60s, and they're going bald, and they've got... grey hair, much like I have, but they are the amount of energy that they put out, it is amazing. It's almost like watching a punk band. It's just incredible. And right. I keep thinking, you know, if they can do that at that age, then that's great. I think you'd like to see that.
Yeah, I heard this live album from the Royal Festival Hall.
Oh, that's right, yeah. I was at that gig.
But I think, yeah, that was with all four.
That
of
was
them.
With all four. And in a way, actually, that's a little bit too polished, because that was like their first reunion gig. And I don't think they did as much kind of changes or improvisation at that point.
Yeah, but it was, I mean, it was really impressive.
Mm. Well, the atmosphere in the hall when they came on was electrifying. Because I never thought I'd get to see them play live, because I only got into the band after they'd folded, you know? And I thought, I'll never see them. It's a bit like the fact that I know I'll never see Led Zeppelin or Pink Floyd or whatever. And suddenly I had the chance to see this band that I... Oh, they're just incredible. Yeah.
Yeah. I know there were some people also from Finland.
Right.
I also was considering, but...
Mm.
I didn't... remember why I didn't go. Yeah, I should have.
Well, yeah, you can get a DVD of it as well, a power-up one, I should say. People took lots of footage of the gig from the audience, and then somebody actually collected it all together and compiled it into a DVD so that you've got like multiple camera angles from everybody with their cameras held up. which sounds terrible, but actually it's pretty good.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Right, so all of the non-progressive rock people are going to be really bored by now, so I better change the subject.
we can talk about Hawkwind.
Actually, I've just ordered the Hawklords album today, which was remastered this year. I spoke to Steve Bailey yesterday on our way to the Nick gig, and he was saying how that this double CD Hawklords thing had come out with some live tracks and everything on there. So that will hopefully arrive tomorrow. So that will be my Hawkwind fix for tomorrow.
Okay, yeah. I must get that too.
Yeah, definitely. 25 years thingy, whatever it's called. Yeah. But yeah, check it out because it's just been released and apparently it's something pretty special. And there's going to be quite a lot of re-releases in the future, apparently.
Too many.
Well, it's confusing. If you look at their listing, there's so many albums. So many.
Yeah.
Talking of albums, it leads me nicely into almost the last topic. And I ask everybody this. What is the future of music? And I should say what I mean by that is the future of the music industry. I think the record companies are becoming outdated, and I think that people are getting used to being able to download music for free. Do you think that the whole music business is dying, or is it going to work out some new way of making money? What do you think?
I don't.
Yeah, I know, it's a difficult question.
I would say that nothing will change.
All right.
I mean, I guess the top 10 stuff will probably... It will be download only type of thing.
Right.
I mean, it's easiest way for the big companies to make money. I mean, they don't have to make any physical stuff anymore and ship it over and... I mean, it's really cheap to release an album only by making it available in the internet.
I think you're right, yeah. No manufacturing, no distribution costs, no royalty for the shop.
Yeah, and I mean, if it doesn't sell, you don't have any stock to get rid of and things like that.
Do you buy music on download, or do you still buy CDs?
No. I mean, I never listen to music from computer. I mean, I buy CDs, I still buy vinyl albums,
yeah,
and tapes, and I mean, I love physical records, and there is no way that I will stop buying them.
That's the approach I've taken. I will download stuff if I don't know it very well, or, you know, just to check it out. If I find something that's definitely something I want, then I'll buy a CD because it sounds a lot better and I just like having it, you know.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, the way I find new music is usually I go to some gig and listen to the band. And...
Yeah, that's the best way, isn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, I don't use this MySpace things and things that I mean...
Well, it's difficult to find what you want. I mean, there's thousands, maybe tens of thousands of people on there, all with their music, and it's how on earth are you expected to find something that matches what you like? It's very hard.
Well, I guess I'm just old-fashioned.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, I've been using computers since early 80s.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't play any music back then.
Yeah.
So I usually have a CD player playing when I'm using computer. So.
Oh, right. I have to admit, I do. I have every single record I own, I've got on my computer and I play it there when I'm working. But then I go down to my basement, which is where I am at the moment talking to you, and all my CDs are down here. So if I want proper music,
Yeah.
That's fine. But if I'm working, I don't really care. You know, I can't concentrate on it properly anyway. So.
Yeah. I mean, I'm quite serious about music. I mean, I never have any background music.
Right.
And I mean, when I listen to records, I just listen to them and do nothing else. And
I used to be like that, but I've found that there's certain types of music that I like that I. Well, let's see, ambient music, for example, is kind of almost purpose-built as a background music.
Yeah.
And I've got some Brian Eno albums, for example, and sticking one of those on when I'm trying to work out why my program isn't working, I think it really helps.
Yeah, well, it might be. Yeah.
I can tell you're not convinced.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying which way is right.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've gone through my list of topics quite nicely there. So I suppose that the final question, Arrow, is there anything else you want to mention?
About my music.
Anything you like. Anything you like. But talk about your music.
Yeah. Well, there is nothing to talk about.
I mean,
I'm learning again to make electronics equipment.
Okay.
I mean, I used to do this when I was a kid.
Right.
And I mean, I'm just building instruments, and I mean, it's really experimental stuff. I mean, it's just experimenting with electronics and making strange sounds and things like that.
But are you building stuff that's programmable, or are you doing an old style sort of discrete electronics, wave generation and that kind of stuff?
Yeah. I mean, it's really old school.
Oh, right, okay. That's quite fun. Have you got any of your... have you recorded anything that we can listen to?
Yeah, I have two recordings.
Okay.
I mean, one is CD and another is tape.
Oh, right, okay. Where can people find out about that?
It's on my Finnish homepage.
Right, at harpernaut.iki.fi.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll have a quick tour around there before the podcast goes out, and I'll put links to it on the thing again.
Well, I can mail you that directly.
Yeah, please do, Aaron. Yeah, that sounds really interesting. I don't know why I'd never seen that.
Well, probably because it's in Finnish.
Do you know, that will probably be the reason? Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I'm mostly writing in Finnish to the web these days because.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of my... With today's world, I mean, everybody is forced to use English everywhere.
Right? Yeah.
And it's... So, I mean, Finland is very small country, and you must keep your own language.
Yeah. I mean, as an Englishman, of course, in a way, it makes things very easy for me, but it's pure laziness, you know.
Yeah.
And it's a cultural identity thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I have to use English everywhere nowadays. I mean, at my work, alien. I mean, you will lose your skills with the native language if
right.
you don't.
Right. Well, we have the same kind of thing in the UK with people from Wales. They have Welsh, and that language is under threat of dying out. Just because everybody in the country speaks English. So, you know, they have a Welsh-speaking TV channel, a sort of different version of Channel 4, and they have, you know, mandatory Welsh lessons in schools so that the language doesn't die.
Yeah, that's good.
Mm. Okay. Anything else?
Well, not really.
In that case... delightful to talk to you again, because it's been a while since we've got together. And
it's really nice. Yeah.
And I know that people will be really interested to look at what you've done on your website and what your music's like and everything. So I would like to say thank you very much, Arrow, for taking the time to talk to me. And well, I'm ever optimistic that at some point in the next few years we'll meet again at a Roy Harper gig. Let's hope so, anyway. Thanks very much, Arrow, for that interview. Obviously, English isn't Arrow's first language, and I think he did bloody well, actually. Far better than I do conducting an interview in Finnish, I can tell you. We talked a little bit about Van de Graaff generator during that interview, and I just must tell you, we popped over to B&Q this morning to pick up some garden bits and pieces and a new barbecue. Needless to say, having got a new barbecue, it started raining immediately, but that's another matter. And in the car park, a bloke came up to me and said, "Ah, so that's what a Van de Graaff generator fan looks like these days, is it?" Because I was wearing my Van de Graaff generator t-shirt. So we had a quick chat about Van de Graaff generator and the gigs and everything, and that really made my day, because there aren't actually that many of us. Anyway, moving swiftly on. Now, here is the soundtrack from Brokeback Cowboy, which is the video that I mentioned at the start of the podcast that Roy's just put out on YouTube.
Sir, are you a real cowboy?
Well, I spent my whole life breaking colts, working cows and going to rodeos, fixing fences, pulling calves, doctoring calves, cleaning my barn, fixing flats, and working on my tractors, riding a horse, and a bit of bull riding now again. Feeding my dogs. I guess I'm some kind of real cowboy. What do you do yourself, man?
Well, I'm a lesbian. I spend my whole days thinking about women. When I get up, I'm thinking about women. When I'm eating, I'm thinking about women. When I'm sleeping, I'm thinking about women. Even when I take a shower, I'm thinking about women. I guess I think about women all day long. Oh! That's my bus.
Excuse me, sorry for bothering, but you're not a real cowboy, are you?
Well, I used to think I was, but I just found out I'm a lesbian. Damn, I never knew that.
Need a band.
Well, there you go. You need to see the full YouTube video to get the facial expressions during that. But it's really good. Actually, Roy could have made a career as an actor, I reckon. What with that and other stuff he's been in, like the Maid film, he really can act. And pretty good at accent as well, I think. Now, on to the A to Z of Harper. And it's the letter U this time. And tricky one, actually, but I've decided to completely cheat and use the track You, Y-O-U, from The Unknown Soldier. Now, this is a track that Roy did with Kate Bush, and I want to read you just a paragraph from the lyric book about it. He says, I am of the opinion that this is one of my most successful works in terms of fulfilling the ambitions I had for it at the beginning of having the inspiration. It's a good piece of drama. I was very well assisted by Kate Bush and Dave Gilmore. The best way to describe Kate always fails me because she's better than any compliment I could ever pay her, and it's a shame that Dave and I haven't found the time to do more of this sort of thing together. He's a one-man inspirational soundscape. Now, I wanted to play this and also the Songs of Love thing at the start of the podcast because I thought it'd be interesting to have a couple of tracks where Roy is accompanied by a female singer. So, here we go. This is You from The Unknown Soldier.
You
time for a little bit of listener feedback. I had quite a lot this time, so I'm just going to pick a couple of samples from it. First from DJ Burnham. He says, love the remix, especially the Great Relish sample. Inspired fellow, this Pasión Duval. I've heard there's a Mexican hip-hop artist called Pious Vandal, thinking of revisiting some of Roy's stuff in the near future. Found George's stories and angle on Roy's work and his involvement in it totally fascinating. Cheers, Dave. Alan Jones says, well, again, just like last year's Origami podcast, you had me completely fooled. I only realised from Dave Burnham's comment that the remix put on out on April the 1st wasn't the genuine article. Still a great noise, though, and the ideal track to remix since there's lots of electronic monkeying on the original. Thinking how the late lamented John Martin charted on a dance track with Sister Bliss, I wonder whether this could actually be Roy's first chart hit. And Andrew Hefferman says, great stuff, Paul. I was hooked throughout. Tom Tiddler's Ground blew me away. It was a real treat to hear that live version of what is an exceptional recorded track in its original form. He played Tom Tiddler's Ground when I saw him at Vicar Street, Dublin, a few years ago. The gig with the really loud Scotsman in the audience, who, along with Roy, gave us a good old laugh with the banter between them. Anyway, that version flooded back a few memories of that night. What a jolly good thing you got going there. As one certain youngster said on the big screen many moons ago, please, sir, can we have some more? Thanks a lot, Andrew. And, unbelievably, we have a voicemail.
Hi Paul, an actual piece of feedback for you. It's Graham, aka Fuzzy. I really enjoyed your interviews with George Fort, so much so I had to listen to them again, but with the artwork to hand, so I could follow what was being said. And like you, I think there were a few things I missed as well. In fact, I think I missed quite a lot, to be honest. My other reason for sending you this feedback was that George mentioned my previous audio feedback about how I didn't like the singing of the woman on Songs of Love, Masumi Kasaka, I think she's called. So when George said that George had done a demo version of Dream Society with Roy singing both voice parts for Songs of Love, I was a very excited camper, I'll tell you. I would absolutely love to buy a copy of this. I mean, if it's anything like the very first thing of Roy's I ever heard, and I loved immediately, and as a result got totally hooked, if not obsessed, by Roy. That was a rather ropey recording that a friend of mine, James, made for me on a cassette, from his cassette recording of Born in Captivity. So if it's anything on a par with Born in Captivity, it would be fantastic. Now, another thing that George mentioned was how he introduced his wife Monica to his Harper obsession and how she was blown away by hearing Roy play, and in particular his singing in a live situation, and how his voice just seemed to float away into outer space. And funnily enough, my ex-wife, she was also not exactly a huge fan from me having played the albums again and again and again in an annoying and obsessive kind of way. But once I had finally persuaded her to her first Roy gig, she too was also blown away by Roy singing. So all this got me thinking, how's about a Warbly Roy contest? So for your edification delight, what I have done is made a simple little quiz. And all you have to do is name the songs, and I think that's going to be the easy bit. But having discussed it with my eldest, Vary, who is also an All Things Harper fan, so she suggested that, as this is a podcast for dyed-in-the-wool Roy Harper fans, who I'm sure in this age of, as Paul has pointed out, is the age of the download, and therefore I'm sure no self-respecting Harper fan won't be without a bootleg or two, perhaps 10. And so what I want you to name are the tracks and the bootlegs and or the albums, and the first person to get all the correct answers posted up on the comment section for this podcast, that's posted up on stormcock.net, I'm going to give the winner a copy of Roy's Beyond the Door DVD. So without any further ado, here's the quiz. ¶¶ This track, a nice easy one. Next track, a little bit harder. A clue. Saddam Hussein. And finally, a very tough one. Oops, just realised there's actually four tracks, not three, like I said in the intro. So there you go. Have a crack at it. The last one, I suspect, may be a bit tough. Now, back to Paul in the studio. I've always wanted to say that.
Cheers, Graham, and thank you for such a great idea. You know, I've thought occasionally about running a competition on the podcast, but I've never got round to it, and you've now done it for me. Well done. I don't know how many entries we're going to get. It's going to be quite interesting to see. Now, to recap, to put your entry in, make an account on stormcock.net if you haven't already got one, and then you can post a comment reply to the podcast, or you can go into the forums and post on the podcast forum there. Either is fine, and give your answers, and we'll see how we go with that. Okay. And now, a quick trailer.
Incoming transmission from Deep Space Charter Ad Astral. Patching through.
Welcome aboard Ad Astral, a quarterly transmission podcasting DJ Burnham's short stories. Let us take you on a voyage far into outer and inner space. Together, we'll visit strange and alternative worlds, experience alien cultures, weird experiments, future dystopias, and mysterious life forms. Leap through the looking glass of quantum reality, cheat death, and embrace life to the full. Our growing crew of voice actors and Foley artists are working to make your trip an unforgettable adventure into the unknown. Ad Astral are pleased to announce that as a special offer to all passengers from stormcock.net, we would like to give you a free upgrade to VIP class on all flights beyond the solar system. Come and find us at www.adastralpodcast.com. Ad Astral!
End of transmission.
Thank you, Mr. Burnham, and very nice trailer, by the way. I listened to episode 3 of Ad Astral last Friday. It came out just last week, and it's excellent. Dave's going from strength to strength with his podcast, and the addition of voice actors really, really makes it very compelling listening. So I thoroughly encourage everybody to go over to his website and check it out, as they say. Now, before we finish, I'm afraid it's time for the usual commercial credits, copyright stuff. This podcast is issued under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works 2.0 UK, England and Wales license, which means you can freely share it with others, but you can't change it, claim you made it, or charge any money for it. The Roy Harper music in this podcast is used by a very kind permission of Science Fiction Limited and is not for copying or redistribution. If you want to help the podcast, as usual, you can go to iTunes and review us on there, either by just giving us a star rating or actually by typing in a small review. There's a donations link on the stormcock.net front page if you want to give us some money. If you want to call in with a voicemail, email me an MP3 or a similar audio file if you want, pd@stormcock.net, or you can use the telephone and ring us on 01223 850 282. If you're outside the UK, plus 441223 850 282. And I would love getting voicemails. Now, we're pretty much over to our CD burning limit, but I cannot resist putting on as one last track part 2 of Songs of Love, again from the Dream Society album. Bye for now. See you next month.
to me. I flew right off my coconut tree and landed on my reality.
Child, there's pain.